The following episode of the VHS Rewinders is part of the Atomic Bikini Podcasting Network. And remember,
be kind, rewind.
VHS Rewinders!
Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us on this first flagship episode of the VHS Rewinders podcast, brought to you by the Atomic Bikini Podcasting Network. Tonight, we are going to do one of my favorite movies, The Midnight Hour. It is a Halloween horror classic directed by Jack Bender, produced by Irvin Zavada, and written by Bill Blight.
Starring Sherry Belafonte, LeVar Burton, Lee Montgomery, Kevin McCarthy, and Dick Van Patten.
Oh, Dick Van Patten. We'll get to him later. You can definitely tell they just needed some star power. But yeah, we'll be right back. You're invited to be our special guest when we broadcast live from the Tiki Tiger twice a month, but what exactly should you expect?
Well, we can never say for sure, but there will be lots of vintage-related topics, songs from the jukebox, tiki drinks, Craigslist finds, and much, much more.
Make a drink, put on your Sunday best, and hang out with us on Live from the Tiki Tiger, where we let you pull up a virtual bar stool into our own private tiki bar. We always enjoy good company.
So check it out at www.tikitiger.com. Click podcast and you're there. It's easy as pie.
And be sure to check out the blog while you're there.
Live from the Tiki Tiger is part of the Atomic Bikini Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to the first episode of the VHS Rewinders podcast, part of the Atomic Bikini Podcasting Network. We're going to try to do a little something different around here than you are used to. I am your host, Ben, and with me is your other host,
Susie,
and we are movie lovers. I wish you get that out in the open. And we are particularly lovers of old crappy VHS movies.
We have quite the collection.
We have stacks and stacks and stacks.
And that used to be what we would go out and do for fun on the Saturdays.
Back when they were actually easier to find.
Yeah.
You don't really see them.
We haven't had much luck lately, but
yeah,
there were some good days for a while there.
Yeah, there were some really,
we racked
really good
up
days.
And now we're going to do this podcast to...
Well, we got to do
the
something.
Most of it. So
totally, let's give everybody a primer introduction to what this podcast is going to be all about. Mainly, it's going to be a podcast in which we talk about movies that we have on either VHS. We're going to include Laserdisc on this, either VHS or Laserdisc that probably are not in print on DVD. If they are in print, they're extremely hard to find and basically shouldn't even exist. No, that doesn't make sense. Well, I shouldn't have said that.
Basically, nobody we know would ever pay $100 for a DVD of them, so they might as well not be on DVD.
Yeah,
basically, I mean, what we're trying to say.
You can say it's on DVD, but then you look on eBay and it's like $79.99. Buy it now.
Like for some out of print DVD that was made for like 6 months and was in stores for like 6 months. So
yeah.
Anyway, tonight we will be showcasing 1985 made for television movie The Midnight Hour.
Yeah, it was made for ABC Television. You could tell that they made this with the intention of it becoming a Halloween classic that got reran over and over and over and over. And it did to an extent, because I remember as a kid watching this, and I'm pretty sure I don't know if I saw it the first time it was on, but I know I saw it several more times. It may have been rerun on cable or something like that. But it made its way to home video. And it was, I don't know who released it originally on home video, probably just ABC home video. And then it was re-released in the late 90s, I think, early 2000s by Anchor Bay on VHS. And I found a copy of that. Actually, it's 2000, September 19th, 2000 was when Anchor Bay released it. I found a copy of the VHS tape at my local Big Lots, and it was around Halloween. It was in October. This was probably 10, 11 years ago, and they had a display of, they were all clamshell movies, like Halloween classics, I think is what they called it. And there were actually some Dario Argento movies, some George Romero, and just some weird old like slasher movies. But then this one was stuck in the middle, The Midnight Hour, and it was in a blood red VHS clamshell case. And I saw it, and I was like, holy crap, that's that movie. So I bought it. It was like $2. Went home and watched it, and I was like, God, this is it. This is the movie I used to watch when I was little. And little did I know how much in demand it would be several years down the road, where people were hawking them on eBay for like $75, $80 a pop. And this is the VHS I'm talking about, not the DVD.
Yeah, it's too bad you didn't have the foresight to buy all of them.
Yeah, no foresight here.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But actually, eventually I did sell my original VHS Anchor Bay edition of this on eBay. I made a copy of the one I had, and then took the insert to Kinko's and made a really awesome color copy of it. So it basically looks like the real deal. And I sold my original on eBay, and I think I got like $75 for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of sad. Kind of sad, but kind of cool at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, Midnight Hour. It was directed by Jack Bender. It's got a lot of really cool people in this movie. Most notably, Kevin McCarthy. 80s character actor. Well, he wasn't I guess you couldn't say he's a character actor. He was in some pretty awesome movies. He was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know. But when it came to the 80s, he pretty much played the same old character, kind of like
the grumpy.
Yeah. Like the grumpy, jerkish
older jerk.
Yeah. And he is awesome in this movie. He's only in it for a few minutes, which is the same situation with Dick Van Patten. You know, they needed some star power. And he actually got top billing, you know, like he was in the top three people, you know, credited this mm-hmm. movie. But he's only in the movie for what?
Yeah, his name is on the cover of the VHS case, but he's only in it for probably a total of like 4 minutes.
If that. Yeah, he plays a dentist. And
he plays the main character's father. But I mean, he's basically at the breakfast table for a couple of minutes uh-huh. and then...
They definitely only needed him for one day, that's for sure. But other than that, we have a young LeVar Burton. This is probably around the time he was doing the Reading Rainbow, you think?
Yeah, that's probably around the same time. This was 85. I'd say Reading Rainbow was
definitely
mid to late 80s.
It was pre 80s, Star Trek Next Generation. Sherry Belafonte Harper, who actually gets top billing. Like, she's the main one.
Yeah, and she's the daughter of Harry Belafonte. So
did not know that. Let's see, we got Peter.
Oh, and she's like 35 in real life or something when this was filmed, and she plays like a 17-year-old high school kid.
Yeah, that's one thing about this movie is it's. We'll get into the synopsis in just a second, but the casting was really interesting because they were going for kind of like a young, energetic high school Halloween movie, but everybody that was cast in it was definitely not high school age. Like this, everybody was at least like in their mid 20s, maybe early 30s.
Yeah, I think she was like 31. Correct myself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but all in all, it's a good cast. I mean, it's a made-for-TV movie. What do you expect? So let's get in. You want to take a little break, and then after that, we'll get into the synopsis of this movie and break it down for everybody?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back.
Are you constantly looking for that copy of Necromancer, Hell Camp, Blood Diner, or Hard Rock Zombies on VHS? Sick of the big chains letting you down every Friday night when all you want to do is pop some corn and watch the best on VHS? Well, look no further. Visit
Ralph's Movie Magic.
We got VHS titles from the floorboards to the ceilings and the Tri-City's best arcade with Tonyville's only working claw machine.
Ralph's Movie Magic.
Memberships are free and come with a complimentary 3-liter and pizza coupons with your first rental. We got multiple copies of each movie, and for the dads, visit
Ralph's 18 and Up Party Patio.
So come on by to Ralph's Movie Magic, located near the split of Route 44 and State Highway 2 behind the old Rock and Mop car wash.
Ralph's Movie Magic.
Serving all your VHS needs, and coming soon, Laserdisc Player Rentals. With over 40 blockbuster titles available to choose from.
Ralph's Movie Magic.
Ow! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. Think little big girl should go walking in these spooky old woods alone. Ow! What big eyes you have.
All right, we're back. So, midnight hour. Let's go with it. It takes place in a, I guess it's a fictional town named Pitchford Cove. It's obviously in New England.
To Massachusetts. They mention Massachusetts at one point.
Ah. Sleepy New England town. It's the fall, obviously. It's around Halloween. And this is one of those situations where it's in the 80s. It's obviously takes place in the current day. But it's that 1980s glamorized version of the 50s, which is a very, very, very common theme in a lot of 80s comedies. Like the Back to the Future syndrome, you know, like where they were remembering the 50s, but they obviously, it was very glamorized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like the main character, Phil Grenville, is driving like a 50s Cadillac, like a mid-50s model Cadillac, so.
Yeah.
And falls in love with a 50s cheerleader.
Yeah.
So, that kind of sets the tone. You know.
Well, another thing that sets the tone for this movie right off the bat, like before the movie even really gets going, you hear Wolfman Jack. So they got Wolfman Jack in on this just to lend his voice to be like the town DJ. You hear him several times throughout the movie.
Look out, it's the midnight hour, baby. Ow!
So, you know, Wolfman Jack, he was a popular dude in the 80s, you know, like as doing that whole 50s revival thing. But so yeah, it starts off. There's a really awesome opening scene of the town paperboy delivering papers, and he's obviously wearing like a Don Post style classic Halloween mask as he does it, and it kind of like lets you get to know an idea of what the little town is like.
Friendly town, suburban town, you know. Little paper boy riding around on his bike with an awesome skeleton Halloween mask.
Very quaint.
Just cool opening scene.
Yeah, and he's like delivering papers to like all the, you know, he delivers one to the cops, he delivers one to an old lady, he delivers one to the grave digger who puts a shovel down and waves back, which is actually pretty funny. But gets right into the main story. It goes to the main character's house, whose name is Phil. What's his last name?
Grenville.
Phil Grenville. A very nerdy, dorky, kind of loser-looking dude. And he's having breakfast with his family. And you immediately get introduced to Dick Van Patten's character, who is his dad, who is the town dentist.
Novocaine?
Mm.
No. It's overrated.
Mm-hmm. It appears as though his dad runs a dentist shop out of his home.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's drilling on some woman.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I don't know about that.
So, but that right there, though, even you know, gives you a whole 50s feel, doesn't it?
Yeah, like the whole running the doctor's office out of your house. And he's talking to his, I guess that's his mom, and who, it was weird because she's way, way, way younger looking than Dick Van Patten. He's talking to his mom and his sister about how he can't find a date for the big party. And that is the conflict of the movie. At the, you know, that's like the big conflict at the beginning.
Yeah, he's too shy to ask the girl that he kind of likes at school out, you know, Mary, I think is her name. So
yeah, he's got the hots for her. So yeah, that pretty much sets the stage. So we cut directly to a school scene, and of course it's like mid-80s style high school, and everybody's up and partying, and somebody's got a boombox playing, and they're like playing games on the chalkboard and all this crap. But the purpose of this scene is Phil, our main character, is about to give a presentation on Halloween to the class with reference to local history.
Halloween. The holiday we now call Halloween used to be called Al Hallows Eve, and it was a pagan festival of fire to honor the powers of darkness.
Okay, guys, that's enough.
Food left for wandering dead souls was how the idea of trick-or-treat got started, and costumes were worn to scare away the evil spirits on the night they had their most power. In the early years of the town, Nathaniel Grenville, my great-great-great-great-grandfather, was minister and constable general. Anyhow, these guys back then believed in all this stuff about witches, and as it so happened, one of the most powerful witches who ever lived came from right here in Pitchford Cove, or Pitchfork Cove as it got to be known because of what happened. And this witch was Lucinda, Grenville's slave, and the great-great-great-great-grandmother of Melissa Cavendish.
Great, great. I know. We all know. It was that old black magic. Thank you.
And this is where it gets interesting. Because he explains to the class and to us that his great-great-great-great-grandfather was a witch hunter.
And the witch that he hunted so heavily is like the great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of Sherry Belafonte.
Melissa.
His friend. Co-pupil.
Yeah, one of his good friends. She's in the class too. So there's a kind of an awkward scene because he's like talking about how his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather hunted a witch named Lucinda, and then Melissa, Sherry Belafonte Harper's character, was like, "Yes, everybody knows that's my great-great-grandmother." So it's kind of awkward but funny. Ha ha ha. So we learned that. I thought this was kind of weird. The old church in the town is the home to an exhibit on the history, the witch history, witch hunting history of that town.
It's the Pitchford Cove Witchcraft Museum.
Yeah.
And
it's in a church. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think they would still use the church as a church.
I know.
In a small little town like that. But anyway, he kind of goes into the whole legend of how Halloween started and what Halloween was for, and how you left food outside for lost souls, and, you know, he went into that whole kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he goes into how the grandfather had to, you know, try to get rid of this curse that the great-grandmother had set, you know.
Yeah.
So he kind of just lays down the backdrop of the whole what's to come.
It's actually a pretty impressive scene because whoever wrote the screenplay for this movie, it is a good job because it's snappy. It immediately draws you in and lets you know what you're up against. And they could have easily just left that part out and just kind of like made it unfold. And you just really wouldn't have that backstory. But they really did a good job of letting you know the history of the town, what's going on. So Phil gives his presentation. They leave class, they're hanging out, I think they're riding in a car. There's a pretty cool scene where they're riding and all of a sudden Midnight Hour by Wilson Pickett comes on. That's another thing about this movie is that they got the original classic, I guess you could say Halloween-y kind of themed. They didn't get like Monster Mash or anything like that, but they got these Halloween style songs in it. The originals, they got Midnight Hour. What else did they have? Bad Moon Rising, which is famous for being in American Werewolf in London, right?
I'm having a hard time remembering now, but
well, we'll get to the Smiths later.
There were some others though.
But there were some good song. I mean, just like I was kind of surprised, you know. But you got to keep in mind this was made for TV, so there was probably a pretty decent budget. This isn't a low budget movie.
Yeah.
So while they're riding around, they have this bright idea, since it's Halloween night, Halloween afternoon, that for their costumes they should steal the costumes out of the witch hunting exhibit. Sounds like a pretty good plan to me. What do you think? Why not? It's a small town.
All they had to do was break in and then break into the basement and like steal an old trunk and crack it open. And
so, yeah,
it's pretty risky.
They obviously do it without even thinking twice. They break in, they get the costumes immediately, no problem. But then they see this room, like a door, and I don't remember if there was a sign on it or what, but it was like "Do not enter" or something. And it's the archive, so they go in there. They're looking around, and this part of the movie actually kind of had like a real Goonies feel to it, like with a scene where they're in the attic and they're looking around, like, "Oh, what's this? What's this? What's this?" And they're all picking up stuff and like, "Hey, check this out!" And then of course, somebody breaks something, just like the way Chunk broke the frame. So they're looking through all this stuff. They find a trunk and they steal it.
Yeah, it has like the Grenville coat of arms on the trunk, you know, like the guy's grandfather's coat
Phil's
of arms.
Yeah, Phil's family.
So
So they steal this trunk and they go to the cemetery, because this is where it gets kind of funny, because they've got the costumes, it's Halloween night, they've got this trunk that's obviously like hundreds of years old, and they're like, "Let's go to the cemetery and put the costumes on." Right.
Yeah, well, they're like, "Well, we can't go to Melissa, who is the granddaughter times three of the witch."
Of the
you
witch,
know?
Yeah.
So they're like, "We can't go to Melissa's house because her dad's a cop."
That's right.
"And we can't go to such and such's house because he's a dentist," or something. So anyway, they think, "Oh, well, the cemetery is the obvious place to go to change our clothes. Let's go get naked in the cemetery."
And I'm sorry, but I have to point this out. When they pull up to the cemetery, it's panning across all these graves, and there is this unbelievably horrible fog effect going on. Well, there's just these tubes sticking out of the ground, just like spewing fog out.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, too. Like, who sees fog at 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
And it's not
maybe in New England that's common, but I've never seen such things.
But it's not spewing out of just these little tubes sticking out of the ground. It was really funny looking. I don't know what they were thinking with that. But so, yeah, they get there, they start putting on the costumes, they open up the trunk, and lo and behold, scroll. They find a scroll, and people probably haven't been using scrolls for very many years. You know, this is old shit. They find this scroll, they unroll it, and what better idea but to let Melissa read the scroll out loud, because she is the great 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 granddaughter of the witch.
"Yos Mundabor Desmagon. I invoke your powers. Come heed my bidding on this night of nights, the eve of Samhain, All Hallows' Eve. Spirits of darkness, I command you to rise from your graves. Et lavabis sagame. All manner of demons, I implore your release from eternal torment."
So she reads it out loud. It turns out this is some crazy, crazy demonic spell. I don't remember the exact words, obviously, but
reads it like in this trance.
It's like, "Let forth the demons, and the dead shall rise," and blah 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 blah.
"Demons arise, arise," and then she like faints.
Yeah,
and you think she's totally serious, but then she like jumps up. She's like, "Oh, I'm just kidding."
Yeah, gotcha. everybody's like, oh shit. But okay, so that happens. Everything seems like it's fine, and
they
then
think everything's
shit
just
gets
fine.
Real. That's mm-hmm. when the shit hits the fan, because the dead start to literally rise. Like, it pans across the graveyard, ground starts breaking. Here comes like all these zombies, and there's a very an homage to a Thriller, obviously going on here. This was post Thriller. All the zombies are very, very Thriller style, yeah. Except for a few. There's some weird ones, but most of them, the spotlighted ones, look just like they walked off that video shoot. There's one zombie in particular that they spotlight who was a killer who had been sentenced to death a few years earlier by the town judge, and they make a good point to like show him coming out as like some huge monster looking dude.
They like even mention his name and his height. They're like, he was 6 foot. 6 foot 8.
Yeah, 6 foot 8.
Vernon Nestor.
Oh, you remember the name. Good job. But yeah, something so like all these zombies just like really grotesque, like dead. But then there's these two women who come out that are look just fine. Like they're just these two, like, I'm a woman. And one of these women is a 1950s looking cheerleader with an actual cheerleader outfit on and bobby tail and all this and that. What are those shoes called that she's wearing?
Wearing like saddle Oxfords.
Yeah.
So,
and then the other woman that comes out of the of a grave is looks very similar to Melissa, and she's wearing like a cape, and you're like, oh no.
Turns out she's Lucinda, the great
Lucinda, the witch.
Lucinda.
So we see that happening. Then the movie cuts back to everybody getting ready for Halloween. Like it's a big night. It's like. And this is a cool series of shots for me because it's just got that whole excitement of like a lot of these people really didn't even know what their costumes were going to be. Now, keep in mind, a few of our main characters stole costumes from the exhibit, so they're wearing those. But there's a couple of our other main characters, Phil, the big one, the main character. He is wearing this horrible costume. Oh my gosh, it's like a vampire's cape.
Yeah, I don't understand what he's even trying to be. He's like, he's got like a cape on, and he's obviously going for a vampire theme. But then he has this like neon blue, sparkly blue wig.
Yeah.
And like blue face paint.
This weird angular, it's almost in a weird way, looks kind of like Ace Frehley.
Yeah, it kind of does.
But not at all, like an 80s.
I don't really know what he was going for.
It's like the Kiss member that never existed's face paint. But he has an awesome caddy. He has an awesome Cadillac, like mint condition, right off the lot. So it's around this time. What's the guy's name? Oh, shoot. Hang on. The jock.
Mitch.
So we go to Mitch's house, and we learn that he's the son of the town judge who is played by... he's in UHF.
I know. I've totally... McCarthy.
Kevin McCarthy.
God, I just blanked out.
And he is being the ultimate bastard Kevin McCarthy that we've grown to love.
You're a liar.
I'm not a liar.
What's so pitiful about it is you're such a bad liar.
Jen, I'm not lying.
Shut up when you're talking to me. Now listen. You listen to me now. You think you can fool your old man, don't you?
I'm not trying to...
Well, you won't. You won't. You think I've been on the bench for 30 years in this town? I recognize liars when I see them. Top-notch professional grade-A liars.
Right.
And I get him. I get him.
Get him good. Now, Judge Crane always
gets his minute. Wait a minute here.
You've got a reputation to uphold in this town. You're the judge's son. So why don't admit it? You stole that costume from the museum. Don't tell me you didn't. Everyone in this town recognizes this witch hunter's getup. Admit it, damn it.
I admit it. Oh. Yeah, I took the costume. I'm going to bring it back tomorrow. Nobody's going to see it.
And he's the old drunk judge. He's got a big old glass of whiskey, and he's pissed, and he's talking about how much he hates Halloween. And there's a really cool scene. These kids show up to his house, and they knock on the door, and they're like, trick or treat? And he just goes, trick! And slams the door in their face. But only he could pull that off like that. But... So Mitch is pissed because his dad, the judge, recognizes the costume, and he's like, I know where you got that. You know, you're going to go to jail, and I'm not going to stand up for you this time, and blah, blah, blah. And Mitch is pissed, and he's like, screw you, I'm out of here. And he just like runs off basically. But then here comes a really cool scene. Now, keep in mind, the dead has risen in this town. And remember that killer, the town killer that we told you about that got hung a few years earlier by the judge? Well, he shows up to the judge's house. Kevin McCarthy is drinking heavily. He walks outside, I think, to throw some trash out. Mm-hmm. And here comes this huge, monstrous figure. And doesn't he, like, see him? And he says something like, guilty or something, and
I
then grabs
so,
him.
Something
and then,
like that.
So it's a pretty
anyway,
cool scene.
So anyway, he ends up strangling the judge, the dad.
I actually remember that scene scaring me when I was little. I remember that scene very vividly and being like,
that's
really
one thing about
out.
This movie. I think if I had watched it when I was little, I probably would have been terrified.
Yeah.
Even though it's like so goofy and fun now, like I think when I was little, I probably would have been really scared if I watched it.
I was terrified.
But
so Kevin McCarthy eats it, which is. I guess that's all they could afford. And they were just like, all right, we got to kill him off and we can only afford him for one day. So we cut to a scene with Phil wearing his horrible blue sparkly makeup vampire getup. And he's driving his just amazing caddy. And he is driving down the street and he runs into this like 1950s textbook schoolgirl. Cheerleader. That's what the word I'm looking for. She's trying to cross the street or something, and he just falls in love immediately. You can just tell by the look on his face. He is like, holy crap. He talks to her like, you're not from around here. And she's like, no, I'm not.
She's pretty stoked about him, too, because of the Cadillac.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, nice car. Is that your dad's?
He's like, no, it's mine.
Yeah. And here's the funny.
She like eventually like hops right in, you know.
Yeah.
So
here's a funny story about that, because I remember, I don't know if when I watched this when I was young, but I remember watching this probably when I was like 10, 11, 12, and I had a huge crush on that girl.
Well, that's really funny.
I did. I don't know if I've told you that before, but I remember thinking she was like the. See, I remember thinking she was like the ultimate woman. I was like, holy crap, that's what the ultimate woman looks like. She was like a 1950s cheerleader. So yeah, Phil doesn't pick her up. She's kind of walking around. She's really dazed, and he's like, well, maybe I'll see you around. She's like, yeah, hopefully. So we go to the party scene, and this is the big scene of the movie. This is it. This is pretty much, you can tell when they wrote this movie, this is what they started with. We gotta have an awesome Halloween movie that has a killer party scene. And let me tell you, this party scene is just incredibly badass. It's like super 80s. Really awesome decorations. Yeah.
Well, like, first of all, they're like in this old, awesome house, you know, that has like a cellar and, you know,
really gothic. It almost looks like the house that Norman Bates lived in.
Yeah. It's just like this old, like Victorian style house, you know, and
the decorations were incredible. Like, they had this coffin full of popcorn.
Yeah. When we saw it, we were just like, God, we need to build one of those coffins. And
if you want some good ideas for Halloween props, watch this movie just for the party scene.
It's the midnight hour. Yeah!
Who is that guy?
I don't know. Must be from another high school.
Yeah, junior high. Yeah, thanks, man. Except this thing is driving me crazy. It's itching me.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, what's happening, Mitch? Is Mary here yet?
No, do you believe it? She got stuck babysitting her little brother.
Tonight? You're kidding me.
Nah, her sister's having a baby or something. On a Halloween night?
I don't believe it.
But I talked to her on the phone. She said she's coming. She's not missing this for the world.
Listen, there you are. Come on, baby, let's dance.
Whoa,
you know, just the whole thing with like everybody's costumes are so awesome. There's candles everywhere. There's props. hang on. I've got a dog wrapped around my freaking mic cord. Hang on just a second.
I mean, there's midgets drinking out of punch bowls.
Yeah, drinking out of punch bowls. There's nothing more Halloween than
coffins
that.
Coffins full of popcorn, skeletons hanging everywhere.
So the costumes
pumpkins,
are amazing.
You know, just
Beastie cutouts.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And we both pointed those out. We're like, oh, oh, Beastie Cutouts. And they're like the cool, like late 70s kind, so, too. So the party's pretty rocking, but the a zombie arrives from the graveyard. And this is one of my favorite parts of the movie. It's obviously some old school character actor dude. I would say he's probably some dude that had to be in his 50s or 60s, dressed up as a zombie. And he's basically the comic relief of this movie. Like, he shows up and he's just like, party! And he like walks in and he's having a lot of fun. He's not malicious at all. He's not trying to hurt anybody.
He'd be out to kill everybody. You know, he wants that blood, but instead he's like, popcorn!
Yeah, he's really interested in
the
popcorn.
He's like so excited about the popcorn.
And there's him, and then there's a weird dwarf zombie. I've never seen anything quite like that before. So yeah, the zombies show up to the party, and people don't really recognize them. Of course, it's Halloween, so
they just think they have really awesome costumes.
Yeah.
So
the party's going on. The dwarf shows up. The zombie showed up, and then Lucinda shows up, who is the old witch, Melissa's great, 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 great grandmother. And keep in mind, the party is at Melissa's house. So Lucinda shows up. Things get a little weird because Lucinda corners Melissa in the bathroom. And what is it she says to her? I don't remember. She says something.
Oh, I don't remember either.
Oh, she says something about her costume. She's like, "What an amazing outfit you're wearing!" And obviously, it's the outfit that was in the museum.
Yeah. And she doesn't understand like the punk girl's outfit. Like, she doesn't understand.
Yeah, she's like she doesn't get it. She's like, if she would have been wearing that in my time, she would have been burned at the stake. And then Melissa's like, well, times have changed.
Uh-huh. And she's like, but not everything has changed.
Yeah.
And she's referring to the way she still likes to suck blood.
Yeah. Oh, geez. We're actually watching this right now.
So we find out that Lucinda's great, great, great grandmother is a vampire.
It's a vampire. Not a witch. And this is where it kind of loses you a little bit, because you thought she was a witch. And then Melissa is down in the wine cellar because the substitute teacher from the high school showed up dressed up as David Bowie, like a really awesome David Bowie costume.
Substitute female teacher.
Yeah.
The hot, like, gorgeous substitute teacher that everybody loves shows up as an awesome David Bowie.
Yeah, and she wants some wine. So Melissa has to go down to her parents' wine cellar. And while she's down there, Lucinda corners her again. And she says, what is it she says about red wine?
I don't know wine real well. My dad will probably kill me if I take anything too old or too valuable or whatever. I don't know what to take. Just something to quench the thirst. But what? There's so many kinds. There's only one thing that can quench the thirst. The unbearable thirst, the thirst of the centuries to be passed on forever. What do you think? Red or white? Red. Definitely red.
Or like, I don't know.
Oh, she asks, she's trying to pick out some wine for the substitute teacher, Melissa is.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just don't know, red or white, red or white. And Lucinda's like, definitely red.
Yeah, and then she bites Melissa and turns her into a vampire. So now shit is at the fan. Like, she is a vampire.
So from here on out, she is out for blood.
Right. In the meantime, the jock guy, Mitch, totally hooks up with the substitute teacher. Well, doesn't hook up with her. But he's in love with her, and he's like, oh, I'm totally going to dance with her, and I'm going to make out with her, and blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold, he does, and it's awesome. It's actually a really, really, really funny scene. Phil, the main character, he leaves the party. He's kind of, like, pissed because the girl that he was after is is hooking up with some other guy. So he leaves, and he ends up picking up the 50s cheerleader girl. She's walking down the street again. So he picks her up, and he's kind of bummed, so he's like, well, where do you want to go?
Phil, I've got a really harp idea.
What?
Well, I was a little down in the dumps, like, before I ran into you.
Yeah?
And I'm just coming out of it, and nothing, I mean nothing, will bring me out of it quicker than a big chocolate ice cream soda. So let's go.
Where?
To the mall shop, of course, silly.
The mall shop?
And she wants to go to all these places that don't exist anymore. She's like, oh, can we go to the malt shop? And he's like, malt shop? She's like, yeah, it's on the corner of blah, 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 blah. So they drive out there, and there's no malt shop. There's a movie theater. This part was actually pretty funny because it's like a little small movie theater with like five screens. And Sandy is like, Sandy is the name of the cheerleader girl. And she's like, why would you want a building with five movie screens? Wouldn't you be able to hear the other movie? That just sounds stupid, or something like that, which is funny because, like, here in this day and age, I would love to have a theater in our town with just five screens, like, in the middle of town. So, yeah, so he takes her there, obviously falling deeper and deeper in love with this strange and mysterious girl. And in the meantime, Vampire Melissa, who is now a vampire, seduces her boyfriend, played by LeVar Burton from Star Trek The Next Generation. But this is one of the coolest parts of the movie. It's all set to How Soon Is Now by The Smiths, which I've seen in a lot of movies, and this might be the only movie I've ever seen, especially from the mid-80s, with a Smith song in it.
Crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Really adds to the mood.
It's really funny because it's like it makes you wonder like how excited Morrissey was when he got the news from his manager. He's like, hey, check this out. There's this movie, U.S. movie, major studio. They want to use How Soon Is Now. They're going to use 45 seconds of it, and this movie's going to be huge. And this is going to be the one that totally, totally takes you guys over to the States. Because the Smiths, they were big, but they weren't like very huge in the U.S. in the mid-80s at all, right? I wouldn't think so. Very, very, very underground college.
I can't imagine Morrissey being very excited about How Soon Is Now being played in a...
No, I bet he was. I bet he got the call from his manager. I bet he got the call from his manager. I bet he called his mom and he's like, hey, Ma, you're not going to believe this, Ma. Yeah, you ever heard of the U.S.? You ever heard of Halloween? Where they're going to use one of our songs? Yeah.
Exactly what he said.
No, seriously. I mean, they weren't that big. They're one of those bands that are much bigger now.
Yeah, but do you think Morrissey really cared? I think Morrissey was so caught up in his music, he didn't care.
He got a huge check out of this. Whoever actually wrote this song, which I think they all, you know, Johnny Marr must have written the music, but they got a big check. That's a long time for it. This song
I
is...
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll...
Maybe
we'll,
they did get more
we'll,
money
We'll
than
agree
I think.
To disagree on this one.
So, anyway.
So, yeah. Vampire Melissa bites LeVar Burton. Very sensual scene. It's kind of sad, too, because you hate to see LeVar Burton get hurt after all he's been through with his eyesight and everything in Next Generation.
Uh-huh.
So, we cut back. Phil... And Sandy, the new lovebird couple, or in his awesome, awesome caddy. They go to a place called...
Stop saying caddy.
I thought that's what you called
it. It's a Cadillac.
Okay, and his awesome, awesome caddy. Cadillac. I thought it was a 501 caddy. Sorry. Sandy wants to go to a place called Lookout Point. And Phil's like, you really want to go to Lookout Point? And she's like, it's the groovy... No, she didn't say groovy. It's the it's the swellest. What a 50s girl.
I think she kept saying hep.
Hep?
Uh-huh. I think so.
So she convinces Phil to drive her up to Lookout Point.
And man, once they get there, she is ready to go.
I know. She's like, come a little closer or something like that. And she's like, let's get in the back seat and take our shoes off.
She wants to go to the back seat, like first thing.
And then she's like, stick your toe in my ear. And it gets really weird when she says that.
Shut up.
But... So they're making out, or they're, I don't know if they are making out or they're about to make out, but then this,
they were making out, they were kissing,
this scary, scary shadow gets cast on the Cadillac, and it turns out to be this crazy zombie werewolf looking dude who came out of the cemetery.
He starts to rip in the convertible top to pieces,
totally ruins it,
and they barely make it out in time.
Barely. I guess they peel out. They go straight to the cops. They tell the cops what's going on. Like, you're not going to believe this. We just got attacked by a werewolf. And, of course, it's Halloween night. So the cops are all like, werewolf. That's the third call we've gotten about werewolves tonight. Ha, ha, ha.
Werewolves about 3 times and vampires about 12.
Old Miss Jenkins said she just saw her husband turn into a bat. Ha, ha, ha. Like, all that crap. So the cops are no help. The law.
The fuzz.
Oh, that's Sandy right. Refers Sandy calls to him the fuzz.
The fuzz. I haven't heard that in a long time, one of the cops says.
Yeah. So at this point, the cops are no help. So Phil takes the notion that he should tell Sandy what he knows about. He's like, well, here's what we did earlier. We stole these costumes, blah, blah, blah. Our friend Melissa read this scroll. And Sandy's face turns to stone, and she's like, what kind of scroll? And he explains it to her, and she's like, did it have the crest of the, did it have the Grenville crest on it? And he's like, yeah. So it turns out, this is where it really throws you for a crazy, this is the twist of the movie. Oh, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't seen it, turn off the podcast right now.
I think we've spoiled quite a bit already.
This is the main spoiler right here. So it turns out Sandy and her friends back in the 50s did the exact same thing, right?
I think so.
Now it doesn't ever come out and say it, but it alludes
to
it.
That was the impression I got.
And she knows exactly what it is that Phil needs to do to make everything right. And she's like, okay, here's what you have to do. This is where it gets really crazy. You have to reseal the scroll, the parchment scroll, with wax made from the witch hunter's bones by midnight, or everyone that's been killed or transformed by any unliving dead zombies, they will stay that way for forever.
Mm-hmm.
So she lays it out.
And did you mention that it had to be with his grandfather's ring?
Whoa! And they
had to reseal it with the wax.
Yeah.
Of the bones with the grandfather's ring.
Which happens to be worn by
Mitch, jock.
Who is part of his costume that he stole from the museum. All right. So it's all set up. After all this is set up, now at this point, the movie's over 3/4 of the way over. It's almost over. There is an amazing dance scene. And this, they hired serious choreographers for this.
Choreographers,
I'm sorry. Crazy dance scene. Original song sung by Sherry Belafonte Harper.
Yeah, and the song was...
You know the song?
Yeah.
What was it called?
I'm Dead. You're Dying.
Everybody
should try it. Get Dead.
Oh. And this is totally playing off Thriller. It's got the zombies doing the Thriller dance. They're really riding on the success of Thriller on this movie. So during the dance scene, while they're all partying their ass off and being dead, because at this point, everybody at the party's been bitten. It's like a really bad STD. Like, everybody's got it and they're just passing it. Mm. So everybody gets bitten. Everybody turns into vampire zombies and all that stuff. So Phil gets to work. Since his dad is a dentist, who was played by Dick Van Patten, he goes to his workstation and makes a silver bullet. Or he gets some melted silver or something out of his dad's filling material or something. dental stuff.
He gets some silver that his dad makes fillings out of, and he melts it down and somehow finds bullets too.
Oh, but at this
and
point,
and then covers the bullets in silver. So.
But then at this point, he gets attacked by Dick Van Patten. Like,
yeah,
he's like in
his
office.
His own dad comes at him.
And it's this dude is so funny looking.
Zombie
like,
Dick Van Patten.
Zombie Dick Van Patten. His hair is just like spiked up and he just has dark rings under his eyes. He's like, ah! And it's just one quick shot. Which further leads me to believe they only had him for one day because that shot took one take. Like it took 5 minutes. So yeah, he gets attacked by his dad. He escapes. And back at the party, we go back to that. Melissa's biting everyone. Everybody's biting everyone. Mitch decides to leave the party. He hasn't been bitten yet. This is the jock guy that has the ring. He runs outside and sees a car that has wrecked in the front yard of the house. And it's his dad, the drunk judge played by...
Kevin McCormick.
Yes, Kevin McCarthy.
McCarthy.
So Mitch is like, Dad's drunk again. Oh, damn. And he gets out and he's like ready to confront him. No, Kevin McCarthy's a zombie, and he kills Mitch. He doesn't kill him. He turns him into a zombie. I'm sorry. Wrong choice of words. So, yeah, Mitch gets zombie-fied. So, at this point, everybody, all the main characters are zombie-fied except Phil. So, Phil and Sandy, they're making their way to the cemetery. They're driving through this zombie land of everybody in the town is zombies. The milkman's a zombie.
Cops are zombies. No cops to help them.
Yep. There's actually like Revolutionary War zombies that have come out of the grave. And one of them has his drum and he's beating it. It's actually pretty cool scene. So they get to the cemetery. They get to the crypt that holds the bones of the witch hunter, his great 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 granddad. They take some, I guess, what is it, dust or something out of the bones? I don't know.
It's supposed to be wax.
Yeah. Make their little seal, and here comes all of his friends. Like, here comes the group, the crew, the undead to stop him from ending it. And you think it's going to be a crazy battle scene. Like, you think this is going to be drawn out for like 15 minutes of like Phil trying to escape, but it ends so fast. Phil basically, how does he get the ring off of Mitch? I forget. Mitch has the ring on.
Well, that was a while ago. You missed that.
Oh, I missed it.
That was when they were back at the house, and Mitch actually grabs a bottle of syrup and throws it on. Phil grabs a bottle of syrup, throws it on Mitch's hand, and gets the ring off of Mitch with a bottle of syrup.
Oh, they
so
go to the
house.
So he's
had the ring for a while he's at the cemetery.
Okay, I forgot. I missed that. Sorry. So yeah, he has the ring. Goes to the cemetery. Gets all of his affairs in order. Here come all the zombies. They're trying to stop him. They get into the Cadillac, and he's ready to seal the parchment. And there's this really cool scene where all of them are on top of the Cadillac, like jumping up and down, beating on the windows and all that. And then he seals it, and then nothing happens, right?
She wants to say some words or something. Huh? What words?
I love you.
Huh?
Like he's...
Nothing happens.
Yeah.
And Sandy says...
She's like, there's one more thing.
There must be some special words or something.
Yeah.
Maybe Phil says that. There must be some special words.
Yeah. And then she just says, I love you. And boom, that's it, right?
Those are the special words.
So basically, at the end of the day, love saved Halloween. Yeah.
Everybody was fine. His ragtop was restored. No werewolf marks.
No scratches.
And
but the funny thing about it is it shows him being fine. It shows Sandy is gone. He goes to her grave and he sees her grave. It says she died in, 1957 or something. And on her grave, written in lipstick, it has their initials like Phil or PG and S, whatever her last name is, like forever or something. And but you think you're gonna, you think that you're gonna see all the other main characters come back to be their normal selves and be like, wow, what happened? What a crazy night. But it doesn't. It just ends.
No, that's it.
Which, made for TV, man. They had to keep it with the commercial breaks. They had to keep it under 2 hours. So who knows? There could be a director's cut.
I wonder.
There could be an unrated, there could be an unrated extended cut out there of this movie. But yeah, everything works out. Phil saves the day. And at first you think this movie is going to be all about Phil. It's going to be like a coming of age of Phil. But I think at the end of the day, the movie is really about Sandy.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. Sandy got to come back and fall in love because she never got to when she was alive.
Nope.
So that was the whole point of the film. She got to be alive again and fall in love and kiss a boy and make out in the backseat of a Cadillac.
Albeit just for a few minutes until the werewolf came.
Yeah.
But yeah, good movie. Good movie. I think it's a classic. Just goofy Halloween.
It's just movie. Good Halloween awesome. Fun. And I know that I wish it were still on TV. I still think that kids today would see the fun in it.
Even if they think it's just campy as hell, you know, they'd probably like it. So let's take a break and then we'll come back and we'll sum it all up. What do you think?
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back.
Gino, what's the secret to your awesome pizza and calzones?
Child, if I could tell you, I'd be a dead man. Uncle Gino's family recipe is going with me to the grave. But I'll tell you this, our crust is always hand-tossed. Our toppings are so fresh and boss. Delivery is our middle name. We're the best, let me explain. Word.
Wow, I didn't know you could rap, Uncle Gino.
It's a gift, just like my ability to craft the perfect pizza. Come on down. We're located off State Highway 2, one block from Ralph's Movie Magic. And mention this ad and get a free topping on your next pizza. Uncle Gino's Pizza.
Uncle Gino's Pizza off State Highway 2, now delivering to East Tonyville.
All right, so anything else about the Midnight Hour that you love? What about the whole just like the warm, fuzzy 80s feel of it? Does it make you feel young again?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the coolest part. It just seems like something I would have watched growing up, even though I didn't. But
yeah, I think the music really made the movie. I mean, it's a great, great film. You know, it's a great family family film, but I think the fact that they used original songs, I think the song choices were pretty good. I like the fact that they used Sea of Love in the scene where he meets the 50s mm-hmm. cheerleader, Sandy. I think it's awesome that they had the Smiths in it. It just blows my mind still that the Smiths had a song in this movie. And it's even cooler that it's How Soon Is Now, which is like the most... What's the right word for that song? Kind of like haunting, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have worked out if it was This Charming Man or Hand in Glove or anything like that.
No, that wouldn't have worked.
But it really fits, you know, and it kind of makes the movie hip, which is there anything that you hated about this movie or anything that you didn't like about it? Really? It's short.
Not really. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's really campy things about it, but that just, you know, that's good. There's nothing... I can't think of anything.
There's nothing really I hated about it.
No, there's nothing I don't like about it. I just think it's a really fun Halloween movie that fits right along with all kinds of other, you know, Halloween movies that you should watch every year. I just think it's something that, you know, everybody that's into Halloween should have it in their movie catalog and watch it every year.
You think it should be
the spirit?
You think it should be part of people's like Halloween tradition? You think it should be up there with?
I think so. I mean, I think this is the kind of movie that if you could get it for like $10 on DVD at Walmart, and it could be in one of those kiosks for Halloween movies, I think a lot of people would enjoy it. I mean, I don't think it's out of, you know, date at this point, really. I mean, I think it's just a classic monster, like, kind of, you know, it could be scary to you know, kids, but then also fun too. Like it's
well, it could be a scary
comedy horror. So
it could be scary in the same sense that Thriller scared the complete piss out of me.
Right,
when I was a
exactly.
kid. I mean, it scared the complete
and like the
crap
Goonies
me.
Scared me. Parts of the Goonies scared me to death, and it's a lot like the Goonies to me.
Did we even mention? We have the movie playing right now, and it just reminded me of something. Did we mention that? Okay, what's the guy's name? John Pickford is in this movie. The dad from that 70s show.
Also
in RoboCop.
Yeah.
There's a good cast. It's pretty good.
It is a good cast.
I like the only thing that I hated about this movie. Well, I wouldn't even use the word hate. That's pretty strong. I didn't like the fact that they casted such old looking kids to play the teenagers.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that could have made the movie a lot. Well, I mean, that's the biggest thing that could have made the movie a lot better is if it had actual 16-year-old kids playing 16-year-old kids. Everybody in this movie looks 25.
At least. You know? Yeah. And it would have, which leads me to ask you this question, and this is something that I wish I had the ability to do. Should this movie be remade? You see all these movies being remade. Everything's being remade.
What if
somebody made The Midnight Hour, used pretty much the exact same story, but cast like 14-year-old kids, not like people playing 14-year-old kids, but like Super 8 style, like 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Yes, I actually think that this could be a really good remake because it's not the kind of movie that's like legendary where it would be sacrilege to remake it. Like I think if you remade The Goonies or something that everybody loves, then it would just be wrong to remake it.
Yeah.
But this movie, I think you could remake it and make it with kids like the kids that were in Super 8.
Yeah.
And it would be really awesome.
And you could get people like John Pickford, LeVar Burton, and everybody to make cameos and be back in it, which nobody would get that except us and be like, oh, LeVar Burton's playing the mailman, you know, like all that stuff. I think this would make a great remake. I also think that this movie should be totally in print. I think it should be very affordable, and I think it should be one of those movies when you go to Walmart, Target, Kmart, whatever, at Halloween, and you see those displays, the DVD displays that have like the bats on them and the Halloween colors and has like Elvira, Transylvania 65,000, like all those movies that they sell at Halloween for $5 each. This should definitely be one.
I think so too.
It should be front and center. It should be the movie that everybody buys and watches because I think it's a great, great kids movie.
This is once again one of those movies where I think we ever have children, I want them to watch it every
year. Oh, they will have no choice. They will watch it.
So
they will watch it every year. You think this movie will ever come out again? You think what are the chances of this movie coming out on Blu-ray?
I don't know.
I don't know if it ever will come out on Blu-ray.
I think it's possible, but the fact that it was a television movie anyway to begin with, it's probably that makes it even less likely to happen. I don't think it will.
I guess too. As a TV movie, it was filmed in what they call 4:3 aspect ratio, which it wasn't even like it didn't use film aspect ratio. So that would be a big strike against it.
You know, I just don't think it'll happen.
But once again, it is available on DVD to an extent. I don't think you can buy it on any online retailer, but you could buy it if you want to shell out. Oh, and another thing, we never even talked about this. We talked about all the cameos in it. We talked about Wolfman Jack, his voice is in it. Macaulay Culkin is apparently in this movie somewhere, and we can't find him, but he's credited.
No, he's uncredited.
He's uncredited.
He's on the IMDb cast and crew.
So he's uncredited as it says Halloween Kid.
There was somebody else, too, that was on the list that said it was uncredited. I can't remember, but there was somebody else famous.
I'm looking. I don't see anybody. I don't see anybody else uncredited.
Yeah, there was. There was somebody.
A lot of good trivia, though, with this movie. Wait, Susie's going to check it out.
I don't know.
You don't see it?
I can't find it now. But I did. There was somebody that was uncredited. I saw on IMDb.
Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much sums it up for the first episode of the VHS Rewinders. This was the Midnight Hour. We give it two glowing recommendations. We both love it. Check it out if you get a chance. And yeah, hopefully the next couple episodes we'll kind of get in the swing of things. This is the rocky first episode. It's not going to be too amazing, sorry. But we'll ease into it, and we're going to be around for a while, so get used to it. I think next week, what would you think? Okay, I'm going to give you a choice. You ready for decision time? Uh-huh. Next week on VHS Rewinders, let's either do Fraternity Vacation or Party Camp, because it's summer, it's the middle of July, it's hot, it's camp season. Vacation season. So what do you think? Fraternity Vacation or Party Camp?
I think Party Camp.
All right. So next week, join us for Party Camp. But signing off, VHS Rewinders, this is Ben saying be kind. Yeah. That was Susie saying. Thanks for listening.